Medical Matters on Talk About, brought to you in association with the Bon Secours Hospital Tralee, celebrating 100 years of advanced medicine and exceptional care.
Now it's time to talk to Dr. Eamon Shanahan. Good afternoon, Eamon.
Deirdre, how are you doing?
I'm not too bad at all. Now, we have kind of a slightly different topic to discuss this week, from different from what we might normally do. And just by way of background to it, I thought we might talk about, I suppose you'd generally call it first aid, but the everyday things that happen when normal members of the regular members of the public who are untrained, have no medical skills, are the only people around to help, and what they can do and should do until professional help arrives, if that makes sense, Eamon. And first of all, in a general sense, do you think we should all have some basic knowledge of first aid?
Yeah, it's always very useful. And to be fair, the likes of the Red Cross and so on, and many other organisations do provide a brief introduction to first aid skills. I think the main principle of first aid is, well, a couple of them. One is immediate action. But secondly, that to any action that's taken is careful and deliberate. And that you know, and that's the reason why part of it is today is actually giving people information about how to administer first aid. I think the other bit of it is that there are two other things I think that are important to say from the outset. One is that there are a number of situations where it is important to try to administer first aid, but that really the person needs to get to the hospital by the fastest means possible, and we'll certainly come to that. And second thing is actually it's worth bearing in mind too. One last thing is that something happens to somebody, and the feeling and the sense is, oh, I must do something about this straight away. But one of the things that we as healthcare providers are always advised is, when you are rendering aid to somebody in this kind of situation, look after yourself. In other words, if somebody has a faint or something and they're somewhere where, you know, you could be knocked down or other injury could happen to you, avoid that. Be aware of places where there might be gas. Try to pull the person away from it. If there's electricity around, for God's sake, be careful that you don't get electrocuted yourself. You know, these kind of things, it's just in the rush to render first aid as quickly as possible, people can sometimes forget, oh, I might get injured myself. So just think about that, because you need to be in your own health if you're going to help somebody else, if that makes sense.
Yeah, absolutely, Eamon. Now, we've come up with a number of scenarios, we'll say common everyday scenarios, to ask you what should somebody do in this case. And we'll start with a bad nosebleed. You're at home, we'll say your teenage son or daughter gets a bad nosebleed, it won't stop bleeding. What's the first thing you do?
Okay, the main thing really is to sit the person down, lean them forward, and then pinch the soft, fleshy part of the nose. And you need to hold it for 10 or 15 minutes. So people say, but they won't stop bleeding. Obviously, if the bleeding is persisting, then you may need to seek additional help. But in the majority of cases, if you pinch the soft, fleshy part of the nose, that's at the top of the nose, for 10 to 15 minutes, what that will do is that I will close off the blood vessels to the nose, and that will stop the bleeding and allow for clotting to happen. I think it's important that the person be able to sit forward and that they can breathe through their mouth. The reason being that a certain amount of the blood is going to come down the back of their nose and into their throat and be able to spit it out from there. I think the main thing to watch out for is just to make sure that the person is not feeling faint. If they are feeling faint, then what you need to do is move them into what's called the recovery position. We'll come back to that in a minute. But if the bleeding does not stop after 10 or 15 minutes of pressure, then it's time that they need to go elsewhere, and they almost certainly have to go to the emergency department, and they will then have the appropriate correct treatment for the nosebleed there.
Okay. Now, another common scenario that happens, well, not that common, but I've certainly heard of it in from a neighbour of mine that this happened to at Christmas. Somebody in your family eats something, we'll say a prawn, they've never eaten a prawn before, all of a sudden they have a reaction to it, their lips start to swell up, they can't breathe properly, anaphylactic shock. What do you do then?
Yeah, okay, a couple of things. Anaphylaxis, by definition, is a major major medical emergency, and by definition, that's a 999 call or a 112 call, and trying to get trying to get assistance as quickly as possible. The good news is that anaphylaxis, fortunately, rarely, I'm not saying it never, but rarely happens completely out of the blue. In many cases, anaphylaxis is at the end of a process where the person has been exposed to an allergen over a period of time, and so in many cases, people have had previous experience of allergic reactions, and in many cases, particularly in children, they will have access to the relevant and appropriate treatment, specifically things like adrenaline pens and so on, that can be administered in the case of an emergency like that. Mostly what you're doing is try to administer an antihistamine if you can. Other than that, it's trying to keep the person calm, trying to maintain the airways, and if they appear to be having any difficulty whatsoever they're breathing, you do need to seek further medical assistance.
Okay, and as you said, so in a situation like that, if somebody has never before, we'll say, had this kind of reaction, yeah, you really are talking about 999.
But I think it's also important to stress that anaphylaxis tends not to appear out of the blue. It does occur rarely out of the blue, but in most cases, the person will have had some form of allergy previously, and there is often, in many cases, the appropriate treatment to hand if they do get a severe reaction.
Now, another one that can happen from time to time. Your child is bitten by a dog. What do you do then?
Yeah. Dog bites are, and indeed animal bites, are unpleasant things. I think one of the most important things is to try to calm the unfortunate child, because most children will be quite distressed by the fact that they have been bitten by a dog. The main thing to do is clean the wound out. We will in a minute come on to the issue of how to stop bleeding. But the main thing is clean the wound, and I'm talking about very dilute solutions of Savlon, Dettol, that kind of stuff, just to keep the wound sterilised, covered with a clean dressing. Again, we'll talk about bleeding in a minute. Fortunately, the vast majority of children are up to date with the vaccinations. So, for example, one of the concerns we have for adults is when they last have a tetanus shot. By definition, all children should, and I stress should, have had their tetanus vaccinations up to date, so they should be okay. There is a debate and discussion about whether or not the child would need an antibiotic or not. That's something you need to talk to the GP about, particularly at the limbs, the hands and feet and things like that. You'll probably cover with an antibiotic if it's somewhere near to the body. You may or may not need an antibiotic if the wound is clean, especially if there's only bruising and if the skin has not been punctured. That's really important. If the skin has been punctured, it does tend to change matters. Mostly the first aid measure is keep the wound cleaned, but probably most of all is try to comfort the unfortunate child who would be frightened.
And is a tetanus shot absolutely necessary if the skin is broken?
In adults, it's certainly something you'd consider. Funnily enough, animal bites, all right, cats are devils, and you never know where the cats have been. Dogs, perhaps not so bad. Human bites are actually worse. A human bite is worse than animal bites. Yes, it depends on how dirty the wound is, how jagged the wound is, and it also depends on how recently the person has a tetanus shot. Bear in mind that each tetanus shot will provide immunisation for up to 10 years, and if you give a tetanus shot too soon after the previous shot, you can actually get a reaction to the actual vaccination itself. So this is something that needs to be, it's a discussion you need to have with your family doctor.
Okay, very good. Now, another one, common again during the summer. You're chopping vegetables or meat or something at home,
yeah,
and the next thing, you slice off the top of your finger.
The finger, or your, firstly, apart from the sheer misery of the damn thing, and it's a bloody sore dose. The main thing really is controlling the bleeding. Now, this applies to any and all places where there is bleeding. It is important to actually sit the person down or lie them down. Now, the reason I'm saying that is because many people, when they have when they're bleeding, can feel faint, and having them upright is only going to make the situation worse. The main thing really is to apply pressure directly to where the bleeding is coming from. That's the first thing. And secondly, to try to elevate the place that the blood is coming from above the level of the heart. Now, I'll come back to those bits and pieces. It is much beloved movies and films and things like that that you see people having tourniquets put on. Fortunately, it is exceptionally rarely that tourniquets are required. And in fact, it's strongly recommended that people do not apply tourniquets, because all you end up doing is cutting off the blood supply to the rest of the limb beyond where the bleeding is. Direct pressure. Just press directly where the blood is coming from. A clean pad or a sterile Ireland dressing, if available, pressed directly down on the wound and keep it there. The idea then about keeping the bit elevated, for example, a finger, lie the person down but get the finger above their heart level. The reason for that is you reduce the pressure of the blood into the blood vessel, and in that way it will slow the bleeding down. If the blood soaks through the first pad, and if you put a bandage around it, then don't remove that pad, but put on another pad and keep the pressure on until the bleeding is controlled. If the person begins to get faint, if they go pale, if they're clammy, if they're rapid breathing, or indeed if they begin to pass out, you know, it's really important to rise the person down on the ground, and then raise and support their legs above the level of the heart. In other words, the idea being, if the hand is caught, keep the hand up as well. The idea behind that is that by raising the legs, what you're doing is you're getting a flush of blood from the feet back into the body, because the problem is the person doesn't have enough blood getting to their brain, and that's the reason why they're fainting. So start off when the person suffers a cut, get them to sit down, because many people will feel faint anyway. If they do become faint, lie them on the ground, raise the limb, direct pressure, press directly on where the wound is. That's the most important. People are kind of messing around and tipping around the edge of the wound. Straight on the wound, absolutely directly down the wound, clean pad or whatever, directly on the wound. That's the most important thing.
And Eamon, I know that this is less common, but let's say the top of a toe or the top of a finger, or God forbid an entire toe or finger somehow gets separated from the limb. Yeah. Should you try to locate it and put it on ice or
yes.
What?
Yes. But please, please, please make sure to put it in something clean like a plastic bag first, and then surrounded by ice. The reason for that is that if you put the limb, or sorry, if you put the bit directly into the ice, as the ice melts, it will waterlog the bit, and then it'll render it useless afterwards for any sort of reattachment. So put it in a clean plastic bag and then put it in the ice.
Okay, what about a broken limb? You're playing football with your kids or whatever, and one of the kids or maybe an adult breaks an arm or breaks a leg, and it's obvious that it is broken. What's the best advice there until the ambulance comes?
Okay, just try to keep the person still and support the injured area. So generally it'll be fairly obvious if there has been a break. And what you try to do is pad the area. Try to encourage the person not to move. Do not move the person themselves, or do not move the injured part unnecessarily. It's really about immobilisation. It's really important that the person not moisten the lips by all means, but do not give them anything to eat or drink. The reason being that they may need surgery, and they will need an anaesthetic, and you don't want them heading for theatre with a full stomach. So do not give them anything to eat or drink. If mostly immobilise the limb and then wait for the appropriate assistance to arrive. If it is a relatively small break, and I'm frequently seeing kids coming into me supporting their arms. And to be fair, a lot of parents will already have fashioned a sling of some sort, and that's very appropriate. It depends on the size of the break. If it's a really bad break, especially if the bone comes through the skin, they shouldn't be moved at all until an ambulance arrived. If it's less than that, if the person has obviously got a broken limb, it looks deformed, and they're padded, and they're not too uncomfortable, then they can be taken directly to hospital. One way or the other, if there is a fracture, if there's a suspicion of a fracture, the person has to go to hospital, because they must have an x-ray so as you can work out what's broken, what kind of a break it is, and then the appropriate treatment after that. So one way or the other, they're going to end up going to hospital anyway.
And another one that's common, especially when people are messing around with barbecues during the summer, Eamon, a bad burn on your skin. What should you do to somebody with that?
Okay, again it depends on the extent of the burn. There are different degrees of burns, first, second, third degree burn. The main thing really is remove the heat source. That might seem like you'd be self-apparent that you should be removing the source of the heat, but if the person is near to something hot, pull them away from it. If, for example, somebody's clothes go on fire, then it's the drop and roll technique. In other words, drop the person to the ground and get them to roll over the ground to quench the flames. If electricity is involved, make sure to switch the electricity off. Again, look after yourself, but also look after the individual. You check to make sure that the person isn't completely collapsed. If there is any clothing or jewellery close to the wound, unless it's actually stuck to the wound itself, remove it, try to take it away, and then call water. pour cold water over the burnt area for at least 10 to 30 minutes, not seconds, minutes. Just be careful if the person has a large burn, not to, that they don't become overly cold. You've got to keep the person warm while keeping the burnt area cold. Now, the idea behind that is by applying the cold, what you're doing is you're trying to reduce the amount of thermal damage to the area. You're trying to reduce the amount of further damage that's been done to the area. Chemical burns, you use water again, but in this case, you may need to irrigate the area for up to 60 minutes. And then once the cooling is completed, cover the burn to protect the skin. Probably the best thing to use is cling film, but don't put it on tightly. Don't wrap it tightly around them and put it on lengthways. Don't put dressings, especially don't put cotton wool in the wound. It's stuck to the wound. So actually cling film is probably the best thing to keep the wound covered. And plain paracetamol, yes, I've said don't eat anything, but you can take two paracetamol, try and relieve the discomfort and soreness. And then head for casualty then.
Okay, Eamon, we're going to take a quick break. We have some more scenarios for you to talk about and a few questions as well from the listeners. It's 18 minutes past two right now. More Medical Matters after these.
Medical Matters on Talk About. Brought to you in association with the Bonsecours Hospital Tralee. Celebrating 100 years of advanced medicine and exceptional care.
Now, we're talking about emergency medical situations. Now, we all know that obviously you get the person to, you call an ambulance or you get the person to a doctor or whatever. But what do you do in the meantime? We're talking about the common everyday things that occur. A listener has a very good question, actually, Eamon, wants to know, what should you do if somebody faints in front of you?
Simple faint. Okay, the main characteristic of a faint is that once you get the person down on the ground, they'll recover very quickly. And that's the real characteristic of a simple faint. All that happens when a person gets a faint is that for whatever reason, there is a momentary reduction in blood supply to the brain. Now, our self-defense mechanism is to allow us to actually go to the ground. I've occasionally seen situations, unfortunately, I hope it becomes less common as time gone on, where somebody's been faint and somebody's been trying to assist them to stay upright or stay sitting. Please don't put the person on the ground. The sooner you get the person down the ground, and ideally again raise the legs above the head, what'll happen is the blood gets to the brain. And then the person will feel better and they'll come around very quickly. And that's probably the main differentiator between a simple faint and a seizure of some sort. So lie them on the ground, that's the message.
Okay, now another one, of course the common one, and I think we all probably know what to do in this scenario, but it's no harm to say it again. Heart attack or stroke, two different courses of action, of course.
Well, there aren't. I mean, if somebody is having crushing chest pain and they're having difficulty with their breathing, call the ambulance. If there's a history of heart problems, when ringing the ambulance service, mention the fact that the person has a previous history of heart disease. If somebody is having a stroke, so the acronym face, arm, speech, time. So if the person's face if it droops on one side, if their face, arm, if they have weakness of a limb that they can't rise up their arm, if their speech becomes slurred, then it's time to call for the ambulance and the ambulance will, they'll be blue lighted into hospital. So both those situations, I suppose that's the bit that every Christmas, Dr. Stack and myself speak to people about the difference between urgent out of hours care and emergency services, and where somebody appears to be having a heart attack, severe crushing chest pain, and or they have a seizure, the only course of action is that they need to get to the emergency department by the fastest possible safe means.
All right, Eamon, I'm going to move on now because we've some general queries for you that we want to get to. And
no
we'll
problem.
Start with this very interesting one from a listener who was in Mallorca last week and was bitten continuously by mosquitoes. The listener says, I have enlarged itchy lumps that have calmed in places. This week I have an extremely bad sore throat and I'm tired. Could that be a symptom of malaria?
Yeah, good question. And the problem is that with global warming, the malarious areas are getting closer to us. To my knowledge, but not my certain knowledge, I think we're okay yet on the northern side of the Med. Southern side of the Med, it's an issue, but I've no doubt that sooner or later it's going to come to the northern side of the Med as well. Generally, the person with malaria feels extremely unwell in themselves, raging fevers, very unwell. I mean, to be fair, if somebody's been ate alive by the midges or by mosquitoes, that's going to make the person sick in themselves. I think the advice is, if there's any doubts, make contact with your GP and they'll check this out for you.
Now, a lady from Killarney who is 70 had a mini stroke 24 years ago. She's on a cholesterol tablet and has a low functioning thyroid. She can't get to speak to a doctor at the moment, but she's a bit concerned as she is getting a number of falls now.
Yeah. Okay. So I think there's a couple of things there. The fact that she had the mini stroke or transient ischemic attack 24 years ago indicates that there is already an issue with our listeners' circulation or brain. Well, actually, her circulation in every part of her body, but it can also affect her brain circulation. She spoke about the fact that she's on a cholesterol medication. The cholesterol medication in this case is very important, and would not be contributing to the falling. What I'd be really interested to know, though, is whether our listener is taking any other medication. I know I'm like a stuck record, but be aware or beware of sedative medications. So it's only a sleeping tablet. Well, it's never only a sleeping tablet, and sleeping tablets can affect coordination in older people, especially if they already have problems with circulation. The fact that our listeners having falls, there are a number of things that could lead to that, and there are a number of ways in which that can be assessed. Put the call through your family doctor. We'll get back to you in due course, and they will organise the appropriate investigations to start to see why it is that you're having these falls.
Okay, a listener says, I'm on a blood thinner. What happens if I cut myself and I can't stop the bleeding?
Okay, and that's a good point. So the answer is that the bleeding will eventually stop. It's just going to take longer. That's the problem. Now, the thing is that if it's a very large cut or a very large laceration, that may be one of the circumstances where you need to take the person to hospital. But even where the person is taking a blood thinner, either the old medication warfarin or one of the newer medications, direct pressure on the wound still works. So it's just direct pressure. All that the medications do is slow the process of clotting, but they don't stop the process of clotting. So what you do is just apply the pressure. You may have to apply it longer to bring the bleeding under control.
Now, a listener called Mary says she's having a problem when she sits down at the moment. It's the bone at the end. I presume she means the bone at the bottom of her spine.
The tailbone.
She says it really is hurting me for the last few days when I sit down. She says she doesn't remember ever having hurted it. What could it be?
Yeah. Okay. For many and most musculoskeletal problems, I'm encouraging people to make contact with their physio in the first instance, because what the physio will do is they'll carry out an assessment of the person. Our tailbone, or coccyx as it's called, actually serves an important function in that it's an anchor point for most of the tendons, ligaments and so on that constitute the pelvic floor. Starting from the tailbone and then radiating out to the inside of the pelvis, you've got a whole lot of tendons and ligaments, and one of those may have got strained and causing you a discomfort or soreness. It's unusual but not uncommon. Most of the time, tailbone pain is as a result of a heavy fall, but it can also happen in cases where there are other strains on the pelvis, if you like to call it that. And that's the reason why I'd suggest talking to your physio in the first instance. Simple anti-inflammatory medications, ibuprofen, can be useful to relieve discomfort. If that sorts it out for you, great. If it doesn't, you may well have to talk to your family doctor and then take it from there in terms of what's next in terms of investigations. I suppose the only other bit at the back of my head is not just to attribute it to the tailbone, there may be something else going on as well. And in that context, just what way is our listener generally? How's their health otherwise? Again, it's a rhetorical question. How are they? Because if they're reasonably well otherwise, then focus on the physio. If their health is otherwise indifferent, they may need to go further afield.
Fair enough. Eamon, I'll just take one more. It's from a male in his 30s. He works part-time and loves his job and is getting on very well. But the problem is, the nights before he works, he can't sleep. He's only managing 4 hours on average. The rest of the time when he's not working, he sleeps no problem. Why is this?
Yeah, anticipatory anxiety. So it's so-called secondary gain. On the face of it, there's no obvious reason why your listener would be anxious on the nights before he goes to work. But there always is a reason. It's just it's not apparent. This is one of those places, and it is a problem that we don't have access to enough therapists. But you need to talk to somebody about this. There needs to be a degree of exploration to see what is it about not so much the job. It mightn't even be the job itself. It might be something associated with a job. One of the techniques the psychologists use, or some psychologists use, is what they refer to as the five whys. But why? But why do you feel anxious? And going into the emotion, and then saying, but why do you feel anxious? And sort of drill down into where the anxiety is coming from. What you're trying to do is help the person get an insight into what it is that's causing them their anxiety. It's not apparently obvious, but there's always a reason.
Okay, fair enough. Eamon, we better leave it there. Thank you for going through, particularly going through all the emergency medicine advice with us, because it's good for people to know those things. None of us ever know when there's a scenario whereby we'll be called upon administer help to people. Eamon, we'll talk to you again next week, and thanks again.
Please, God. Take care, Deirdre. Bye.
And that was Dr. Eamon Shanahan there with this week's Medical Matters.